Casey Scholes from VH1's Rock of Love, and this is Talk of Love, the new podcast. This isn't just reality, this is real life. What's up, everybody? It's Lacey motherfucking Scholes, and this is Talk of Love, episode 25. How are you guys? How's everybody doing? So I wanted to bring up something to you guys, and I was a little on the fence on whether or not I wanted to bring this up, but I went ahead and decided that I am going to bring it up. But before you think I'm going to get preachy, just know that I have everybody's good intentions in mind, and I'm going to keep it short, so don't worry. And then after this, I'm going to bring on Mr. Boston. So the whole mask issue, let's talk about that for 1 second. So you guys, if you've been watching the podcast and if you know me as well as you can know me from, you know, what I post online and how you know me on television, that sort of thing, you know that I have always been an advocate for the underdog. And that is why I'm an animal rights activist. That's why I have been a strong supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. That's why I'm a strong supporter of the LGBTQ community. The environment, if you want to call the environment an underdog, I actually would. But yeah, I've always been outspoken for the underdog. And right now, what's happening in our country with this health crisis is the underdog is the group of people, which there are a lot of, who have compromised immune systems or compromised health. So I want to talk about that just for a second. There's a lot of resistance with the whole mask thing. And I've been trying to be open-minded to both sides and like hear everybody and really take it all in and understand, because it's a major conflict. I mean, people are like fist fighting each other. It's like insane. So the two arguments I've heard against it, number one, that it infringes on people's rights. And number two, I've heard people refer to people who do wear masks as sheep. So let me just start with the first one. You guys also know, if you've been watching the podcast, that I'm very outspoken about the importance of civil rights and civil liberties in this country specifically. That is what this country was founded upon, was our freedoms. So I would never, ever advocate for something that was oppressive. I mean, in fact, that's like the very opposite of everything that I believe in. So, you know, the thing about wearing masks and if the government is suggesting it or the government is requiring it, depending on where you live, you know, there's a lot of things that are being required of us by law for our safety or for the safety of others. You know, seatbelts, you know, you will get pulled over and you'll get a ticket if you're not wearing a seatbelt. Is that infringing on civil liberties? Do I have the right, you know, it is my life, whether or not I get flung out of the car or not. But we all accept that. We accept that the government gets to tell us that when we get in our private car and no one's around, we have to put a seatbelt on, or if we get pulled over, we will be fined. Keeping it with cars, drunk driving. You know, a lot of people think it's totally okay to have a couple of drinks and that they're fine to drive, but they are putting everybody else on the road at risk. So their actions are affecting others around them. So they're told you can't do that. It's against the law to drink and drive. Same thing with cigarettes. There's a lot of places that you can't smoke cigarettes because the secondhand smoke will affect everybody else. Riding a motorcycle, a lot of places in the country, I don't know if it's all 50 states, but a lot of states require that you wear a helmet if you're going to be riding a motorcycle. So we have accepted all of these safety precautions as acceptable. And it's interesting to me that those things are all deemed acceptable to us and normal. Yet this whole mask thing, for some reason, there people are saying that's infringing on civil liberties. You know, but if you take it from also the perspective of just being a kind human being and caring about others, this is a really great analogy I saw on Twitter. If you have sex with somebody, you use a condom. You're doing that to make sure that nothing gets passed in between you or your partner. So it's just looking out for other people. And I understand that, you know, you might catch something and not actually get sick. I'm pretty confident. I feel, you know, I'm a very healthy individual. If I caught something, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get sick either. But it's not about that. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about the people around us. And we don't know what their situations are. If we're out in public and we're in a store and there's a lot of people there, or if we're in a restaurant and there's a lot of people there, I don't know that the people around me don't have compromised immune systems. What if they're dealing with cancer? What if they're dealing with diabetes? What if they have been through chemotherapy? Or what if they're fine, but they live with their grandmother who had just went through chemotherapy? So we got to really get into the mindset of thinking outside of ourselves, because this isn't about you. This isn't about me. This is about protecting our society and the people that might have compromised immune systems, you know? So that is, to me, just putting on a mask. It's not permanent. It's just for a few months until we get this thing under control. And to me, that doesn't say like you're scared or you're afraid of getting sick or you're you know, caving to the demands of the government or whatever. To me, that just tells me that you care about people around you. If I see a mask on you, I go, that person gives a shit. So you should want to be that person who gives a shit, because it's not hurting you to wear a mask. And as far as the whole sheep thing, that is just ridiculous, because, you know, my whole entire life, I have always been the one that kind of does things outside of the box. You know, I'm always the one that, like, if there's an option of like, this is how things are done and this is how things are not done, I'm always the person that's like, well, why can't we do it that way? Well, what if I want to do it that way? Well, what will happen if I do it that way? I was always the rebel, you know, everything from how I was in school to how I dressed to my hair color. You know, I've always been a rebellious personality type. And, you know, that has worked in my favor in a lot of ways. As I said, it kind of lends itself to creativity and thinking outside the box. And other times it's gotten me in trouble. But people have said a lot of horrible things about me in my lifetime. I've been called a lot of names. I've been called pretty much all of the curse words. But one thing that has never, ever, ever been said about me, ever, I have never been called a sheep, and I have never been called a follower, because I'm just not. I mean, you can say terrible things about me. I am not a follower. Yet, I wear a mask. I wear a mask every single time I am in public, because it's not about me. It's about the people around me. I don't know what their situations are, and I'm not going to put them at risk. I might be carrying something and I don't know it, because that does happen a lot, where people are carrying something. They're unaware. They don't have the symptoms, but they might be contagious. I'm not going to go out there and be responsible for somebody else getting sick or someone's grandmother dying. I mean, that's a horrible, horrible thought. So for me, it's a very, very easy decision. I wear the mask everywhere I go. It doesn't make me weak. It doesn't mean I'm scared. It doesn't make me a follower. It doesn't make me a sheep. It just means I care. I care about people, and I want to see this thing go away, and I want to see everybody get better. And wearing masks, all of us, and doing social distancing is the only way that's going to happen. So anyway, I wasn't sure if I wanted to tell you guys that, because I know we're sick to death of hearing about it, but because I have this platform and I have the ability to talk to a lot of people, I feel it's sort of my moral obligation to put that out there, because I care. I give a shit. So anyway, that is the end of that. And let's move on now. So I am really excited, because you guys know this, I was a huge fan of all of the Surreal Life shows, but I also, like, I religiously watched them all. I watched all the Flavor of Love seasons. I watched all of I Love New York. I watched the I Love Monies. I watched all of them. They were so fun and so entertaining. And one of my personal favorite characters on I Love New York and also on I Love Money was Mr. Boston. He was just so funny and so quirky and so, like, marched to the beat of his own drummer. So I'm very excited that he agreed to come on to my podcast. So please, everybody, welcome Lee, aka Mr. Boston. What's up? How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Lacey?
I'm doing great. You look the same. You've got a little bit of facial hair happening, which I like, but otherwise, like, you haven't aged a day.
That is good to know. Yeah. I mean, my hair on my head is still there. So since the show was aired in 2007, 2008, I haven't balded, I don't think. I've grown a little bit of facial hair out. I haven't gained weight. Yeah.
You didn't really
have any.
You're doing great.
Or anything.
Yeah. You're doing fantastic. Yeah. It's amazing to me. I've had quite a few guests on that are from the different shows. And for the most part, like, everybody looks the same. I think I attribute that to being in the entertainment world. And, you know, we are all obviously here because we like entertainment and music and all that good stuff. But what do you attribute your good looks and your youthfulness to?
Yeah, well, you know, I like to do a lot of exercise, like jogging and a few marathons I've done.
Oh, really? You've done marathons?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's impressive. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I got into it about 5 or 6 years ago. I just, you know, I was like 33 at the time. I just felt like I wanted to start running. So I do a lot of running and races and marathons or half marathons kind of thing.
That's awesome. Good for you. So aside from that, how has life been since the shows? Do you get recognized a lot? Are you still in the entertainment world? Have you moved on from that? You're doing other things? What's been going on with you since the shows?
Right. So since the shows, I would say I'm no longer active in the entertainment world. I was out in LA from like 2006 until 2011. So I was still kind of doing some entertainment stuff like YouTube, you know, it's type of videos during that time. But then in 2011, since I grew up in Boston, I decided to move home to Boston. And I always kind of had like a full-time job as an accountant. So I'm currently working as an accountant in Boston.
Nice. That's awesome. Good for you. So how did you get into these shows to begin with? Because I would assume you were living in Boston when you got to audition. Is that correct?
No. I actually just moved to LA in about April or May of 2006. So I had to quit my job in Boston in order to move out there. So then as soon as I got out there, I was searching for an accounting job. It took a few months to find a job. So in the meantime, while I wasn't working, I had some free time and I had seen like the first season of Flavor of Love. And then my friend sent me this online casting call that said in Hollywood, you know, which was right near where I live, they were giving some girl a spinoff of the show. If you live in LA, just like show up to the open casting call. So I figured, since I kind of have a sense of humor that's more catered towards that show than other reality shows that are more serious. For example, I would not want to go on a show like Survivor or Real World where they try to be more serious.
I love Survivor. Yeah. I'm obsessed with that show. I would love to go on that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you and I should team up. We should go on there together. We would like totally kick ass.
I think, my style of comedy may not work too well on that show.
Oh, I think it would. You would totally just like make friends with everybody and you would be like so not the threat and you would be the guy that like makes it to the very end because people think you're just like friendly and nice and not a threat to them. So you would totally be the one that makes it to the end.
Hopefully. So I sent an email to the casting people, you know, explaining like I just moved out to LA and I'm pretty funny and I'd like to come in for an interview. So they did respond and they booked a specific time for the interview. That's important because if you just like show up to an open casting call, sometimes you wait in line all day, several hours. So the fact that I got a specific appointment was good. I just showed up. They were finishing up with an interview with some other guy who was boring and obviously, did not make it onto the show. It was two casting guys. They sat me in front of the chair like we're doing now. They just asked me questions about like relationships and sex. And I was just thinking I have to be like as funny as possible. So I just gave them a bunch of like funny answers. And they called me up a month later. Are you still interested? Yeah. So then a month after that, the show started film.
That's awesome. Yeah. So when you went to LA, were you going to do accounting or did you know that you wanted to get into television when you went to LA?
Yeah. So I mostly went there to do accounting. And then I just sort of like randomly, found that casting call. And since I had some free time, not yet working, yeah, I decided to do it then. Yeah, I primarily moved to LA because my brother, he was out there in LA, and also like a couple of my other friends from like high school had gone out there.
Okay, yeah. Nice. Right. Speaking of your brother, I think I read somewhere online, is he your twin brother? Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, exactly. Nice. Yeah. Is he an identical twin or fraternal?
We think we're identical. It's hard to know. when we were born, the doctor told our parents we're identical, but that was before DNA started. And supposedly some twins who were told they were like identical or really fraternal or vice versa. So,
okay.
I guess there's no way to know unless you do the DNA test since identical twins have the same DNA and fraternal twins do not.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of the people who I have brought on to this podcast that were on Rock of Love or Flavor of Love or I Love New York, a lot of people had, of course, different perspectives of how they did or did not enjoy their time on the shows. And on Rock of Love, I played the villain character. And because I was kind of in character the whole time, it was fun for me. And for me, it kind of felt more like an acting job than anything else. But it didn't even occur to me until I started interviewing people with this podcast. A lot of people did not enjoy their time on these reality shows, and they felt exploited and they felt taken advantage of, and they were embarrassed by some things. And, you know, some of the other castmates were like, yeah, I would totally do it again. Others were like, I wouldn't do it again at all. How would you rate your experiences on those shows? Like, would you do it again? Did you have fun? Did you enjoy it? You know, how do you feel about all that?
Right. So I thought the actual experience of actual filming the show, I actually thought it was kind of stressful, like, you know, because there are guys in the house fighting all the time. And there's always like a camera person on you. And even when there's not a camera person, there are, you know, cameras like in the wall and all that. So I thought it was a very stressful experience. I mean, I was in the house about, I think, like 2 weeks on I Love New York, and it was quite a stressful experience. However, like after it started airing, I enjoyed all that, you know, like getting recognized and all that. But the actual filming, I thought it was quite stressful. Yeah.
Yeah, you had some intense people on your show on both I Love Money and I Love New York. You had like a really intense cast. I could totally imagine. It was a little easier time for me on Rock of Love because the people I was dealing with were not so intense as for the most part versus like what you dealt with. So it makes sense. So how much time was it in between I Love New York and I Love Money?
Yeah. So I Love New York was filmed, I believe, September 2006. And then it aired January through April 2007. And then I Love Money was filmed February 2008. And it started airing, I think, July of 08.
Okay. Did you have any doubts on whether or not you wanted to do I Love Money after you did I Love New York?
Well, I wanted to do it in terms of like, I wanted to go on another show, but like I had also been like working a full-time job in between the two shows. So I had to like quit that job to go on I Love Money. So it was kind of a tough choice for me since I had a job. Like, do I want to quit my job to go on the show? And like, yeah.
What would you have done with the money if you had won I Love Money?
If I'd won the 250 grand, I would not have rushed back to the accounting world right after. You know, I would have taken like a world trip and that kind of thing. You know, visit a lot of Europe and Asian countries. Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's talk about, let's really get into I Love New York, and then we'll come visit I Love Money in a second. So I Love New York. So you said that you did see Flavor of Love. So you had an idea about who New York was. Were you, and no shame in this, whatever your answer is, were you intimidated by New York? Because I will tell you, I probably would have been. So going into that, what were you thought?
Right. Going into filming, you know, I was intimidated by her, and I knew her mother was a little scary, so I was going to be intimidated by that. However, like as soon as it started filming, I noticed she was a little harder and tougher on the other guys than me because she kind of, you know, saw like, yeah, like
your energy is softer than that of the other guys.
Right. Yeah. I think she was worried, or the producers were worried, like if she was like too tough on me, yelling, screaming at me, I would just quit the show or something. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Right. So a lot of people are saying that they did see at the very least a friendship with you in New York, that they did see some kind of connection there. Did you end up developing feelings for her romantically, or did you look at her more as a friend, or did you just look at her more as like a colleague on the show? Like, what was your perspective of New York? How did you feel about her?
I thought she was a very friendly person to me. So there was a little bit of a friendship vibe. In terms of romantic vibe, I mean, I didn't think we had a lot of chemistry. However, I still got to make out, you know, with her several times on the show. I mean, well, it was good, except she like smoked a lot of cigarettes. So as I'm making out with her, like her cigarette breath is getting inhaled into my mouth. And I mean, I can't, you know, like suddenly go like, oh, that's gross. So like, I just have to keep making out with her, pretending like I'm enjoying it. But it's like this cigarette breath that's like getting inhaled into my mouth.
You're like licking an ashtray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I did think that, like, from a viewer perspective, I thought that that you guys on her show were, like, super entertaining. And it's funny because, like, guy drama, like, on your show versus girl drama, like, on my show is very, very different. And so I know, like, for instance, I mean, Chance is, like, a really tough, intense dude. And the two of you are just, like, polar opposites in every regard. So was that whole thing with you and Chance, was that for real, or was that kind of like played up for the cameras, or did you just really like, you guys really butted heads?
Yeah, it was primarily played up for the cameras. I mean, yeah, it was mostly, you know, played up. Like, I mean, like I got along with some guys, but the two of us had to pretend like there was someone that we did not get along with, so we can create some drama there. So, you know, like I would get in his face, he would get in my face. But what I did not realize before the infamous boxing match, what I didn't realize, I mean, he's skinny, but he's much stronger than he looks.
He looks, like, he does look strong to me. And he looks like he knows how to fight also.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I was not prepared for that before the boxing match. But, you know, in terms of the draw, I mean, it was mostly just, you know, played up.
I would have been so pissed if your nose was broken, right? On the boxing match?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I would have been so pissed off. And were you angry? Not necessarily at Chance, but just that like you guys were put in that situation?
Well, to be honest, I was more, I was a little mad the producers had the boxing match, but I was also mad at myself in the boxing match. I mean, if I had like, I never would have won the fight with him, but if I knew how to box a little bit, I could have at least like had my clubs in front of my face, so he wouldn't have been able to like, you know, hit me square in the face.
Yeah,
more mad at myself for not like taking the instruction for like a couple hours before the match like more seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, that you guys like got thrown into the deep end with that, you know.
Yeah.
So one thing that I like to talk about a lot on this podcast is the producers, because everybody wants to know how much of these shows is real, how much of it isn't real. And from my own personal perspective, I always tell people that like most of it was real, but definitely the producers would manipulate certain situations that maybe would not have happened a certain way, but the producers got involved in that and you know, made things happen. Or like editing sometimes was like made things a little bit different than how it truly was. Aside from that, I would say that most of it was as real as you can get, given this artificial environment that was created for the show. So is there anything that happened on your show that stands out? I always also say that the producers are the true villains of the show. Is there anything the producers did that you thought was like kind of underhanded or kind of a low blow? Or did they manipulate things a certain way that maybe you're aware of that the people watching were not?
The only thing I can think of, the night before the infamous boxing match, I remember Chance was like upset about something, and he was basically like threatening to quit the show. And I remember like hearing a producer tell New York, like, can you please go convince Chance to not quit tonight, because there's a very important activity tomorrow that we want him to be a part of. So, you know, if he has to quit, like, have him stick around until tomorrow, and then maybe he can quit tomorrow night. So at the time, I didn't know what it was, but I then figured out they wanted to keep him around for the boxing match against me.
Oh, wow. So, That's crazy. That's so crazy. Wow. Well, so who are some of the people that you felt that you did bond with as far as the guys go?
So I think I bond with 12 Pack, Tango, a little bit even Chance's brother Rio, bond with him.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. There were some guys, I mean, I didn't dislike. It was just we were like total polar opposites, you know, like Chance and White Boy. So, I mean, I didn't dislike him, just the three of us were not friends.
Right.
Yeah. There were a couple guys that got eliminated the first couple episodes I didn't really like. I can't even remember their names.
That makes sense. So let's get into for a minute. Let's put that on pause and talk about I Love Money. So I Love Money, that was really intense. Just from me watching, it looked really intense. And there was so many just additional personality types to everything. What are your overall thoughts about I Love Money and how that all went? And then we'll kind of get into some more specifics.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the show was kind of stupid because I did the first season of I Love Money. So I remember the producers were describing the show as similar to that Real World Road Rules Challenge show.
Yeah.
So since on the Real World Road Rules Challenge, they give out, you know, prizes along the way, like a new car or a super expensive, you know, vacation kind of thing. I went on the show assuming that there would be prizes they would give out. So at least I would go home with something. Of course, we get on the show. It's a grand prize of 250 grand for the winner. That's great. But the other 16 people get nothing. So I was disappointed. Yeah.
If we got to go home with our dignity, I think that was a good prize to have if we were lucky enough to have that.
Yeah.
So how long were you... You were in Mexico for I Love Money. How long were you there for?
About 2 weeks, maybe 12 days or so. Yeah.
Okay. And so one thing that a lot of people who are fans of this podcast were asking me on the Talk of Love Instagram page, everybody wants to know about your relationship with Pumpkin. Like, how did that all form? Was that genuine? Did you guys really have feelings for each other? Did you guys continue talking to each other after I Love Money?
Yeah, so I hung out with her a couple of times in 2007. It was before I Love Money film. So I hung out with her a couple times. It's just at the time I lived in LA and she lived in Bakersfield, California, which is an hour and a half from LA.
Yeah.
It was kind of hard to hang out with her just because it was a long drive and LA traffic is horrible. So an hour and a half drive, you know, it turns into 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I did hang out with her a couple times and we had a good time. I haven't spoken to her in a long time. So I don't know what she's up to now, but I wish her the best. Yeah.
It's weird because she sort of disappeared from social media. I've actually been looking for her because I thought it'd be fun to have her on the podcast as well. She's one of the few people I haven't met or talked to, but I was kind of curious how she's doing. And it's interesting because some people have really disappeared almost seemingly on purpose from social media completely, or maybe they're on social media, but under a different name. I don't know, but it's strange though.
I have heard she's completely disappeared. I mean, I don't have her on social media because I think her Pumpkin pages are no longer there and she's not under her real name either, maybe. Yeah. I guess some people, you know, they do these shows and then they just want to move on with their life.
Yeah. I that's what it seems like to me as well. And I sort of understand it. It makes sense to me.
And also it's it also is quite possible. If someone is, you know, searching for a real job, they do not want a lot of the reality TV stuff to come up in Google searches, you know, because they're worried an employer could, see the stuff and
see that Pumpkin is a master spitter.
Not fire them. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you still go by, do people call you Mr. Boston still?
They do. Yeah. Yeah. But now that 12 years have passed, a lot of people will recognize me from VH1, but they can't remember, character name, Mr. Boston, or they think I went to high school with them because they know they recognize me somewhere, but they can't put it to the VH1 shows because it was so long ago. So they're did we go to high school together? I'm no.
Yeah. I love messing with people. Sometimes, I feel lately I've been getting recognized more often because Rock of Love and a lot of these of love shows are like appearing on streaming services now on a regular basis. So,
yeah,
and my crazy red hair like can be seen from a mile away. But before these were on streaming services, when it was that like in between period, you know, 5 years or so after the shows, I always loved to mess with people. So people come up to me and be like, were you on, they'd be like, I feel like I know you from somewhere. That was always the question I get. Like, how do I know you? And I'd be like, oh, I used to babysit you. And they're like, no. And they're like, your mom used to walk my dog. And they're like, no. I'm like, I think we went to junior high school together. And they're like, no, like, my boyfriend cheated on me with you. They're like, no. And by the time it's like over, their brain is so scrambled. They're like, I give up.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. So how was the adjust? I'm getting away from I Love Money, but I'm going to come back to it. I just, this question just popped into my head. How was the adjustment for you going from, you know, just a regular guy to like suddenly everybody on the street knowing who you are immediately after the shows aired when it was like still fresh on everybody's brains? Was that weird?
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Well, yeah. And it was especially strange because so it was filmed, like I mentioned, September of 06, and then it started airing in January of 07. And then in November of that year, I started a full-time job. I did not, you know, mention in the interview, like, I went on this reality show that hasn't aired yet, but it's going to air. So yeah, I started the job, and then a couple months later when it starts airing, I walk into work and like everyone at the company is like, hey, saw you on TV.
Yeah, I bet that was a trip.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I was, you know, surprised at like how many people recognize me because, I mean, like I saw, you know, Flavor of Love was a hit, but I was still thinking like if, you know, if like 3 million people see our show, that's like only 3 million out of like 300 million Americans. So yeah, I was surprised I was getting recognized everywhere.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I know. It was definitely an adjustment for me. It was pretty wild. But how did you deal with haters? Because I know everybody had them. Everybody on the shows had haters at some point on the internet. Was that something that ever got under your skin or were you able to just brush it off? How'd you feel about
that? Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. Apparently male reality TV stars, the haters on the internet are other guys. And then female reality TV stars, the haters on the internet are other girls.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, like I was getting, you know, a lot of nice messages from girls and some guys, but then a few of these guys are just like, hey man, I'm from Boston. You give Boston a bad name. Respond good, then don't watch the show, moron.
That's it's shitty, but that's actually not that bad if that's like the worst that you got. So I got a lot of that too, actually, because I lived in Los Angeles for the last 14 years before I moved to Las Vegas. But I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I spent, you know, first 27 years of my life in Dallas. I got a lot of that too, like, oh, you're not a real Texan. You give Texans a bad name. Yeah, that's like a funny insult. But it seems like you managed it, like it didn't really get to you, is basically
what I'm saying. No, it didn't really. No.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I mean, like, I never, like, you know, like had an experience where, like, I was in a bar and, like, some guy came up, like, I hated you on the show. Do you want to fight or anything? I never had that.
Well, that's good. I feel like most of the hate is usually like on the internet or like in comments sections or whatever. So but that's good you didn't let that bother you, because I do know a lot of people that like really affected them. I mean, how could it not if you're not used to that sort of thing and then you get thrown into this crazy reality TV world and suddenly everybody knows who you are and everybody has an opinion on you, whether you wanted it or not. So, but that's good that you were able to just like brush that off. So back to I Love Money. One thing that really stood out to me that I thought was, and a lot of the fans as well, that really was kind of like an intense moment. Not really intense, actually. I take that back. It was an emotional moment, was you kind of had a breakdown on the show, and that actually is relatively normal. I had an emotional meltdown on my show at one point. I feel like a lot of people did, because no matter how hard you try to keep up that like tough exterior, and if you're playing a character, how hard you try to keep that up as well, it's exhausting. You're not sleeping. You're in a foreign environment. You don't get to check your emails or listen to music or anything like that. And so I felt like a lot of us kind of had a moment where we're just like having a breakdown. And it sucks because in real life, if you're feeling overly emotional, valid or not, you can just kind of escape. But like, there is no escaping on these shows. The producer's like, where are you going? Why are you crying? I'm going to put the camera in my face, in your face.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I thought it was, so you had a little bit of an emotional moment on I Love Money. I thought it was really sweet the way that 12 Pack handled that, because a lot of guys are like not that sensitive and kind. So
yeah,
let's talk
still,
about
he
that.
He still sent me home. He still sent me home.
Right. But at least, yeah. But I feel like in that moment, though, he could have been a dick and he wasn't. He
right.
showed you a little bit of compassion. But let's talk about, because that was a very dramatic thing of you being sent home. And I feel like you were kind of done dirty. Do you feel that way, too?
Yeah, well, it was kind of a problem. Like, it was the first season of I Want Money, so the producers were still kind of like, you know, figuring out how the show was going to work and that kind of thing. So that scene where, like, you know, like we were deciding, I'm trying to remember so long ago, I was grabbing my name card off of the table, and then a producer's like, you can't grab your name tag if they put your name in the bin.
You're talking about the check.
Check. Sorry. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very stressful show. I mean, like, in retrospect, I was just mad at myself, because if I had talked to 12 Pack more and convinced him to keep me around, I think he would have sent home Brandy instead of me. And then, like, I saw the order of people that went home after me when the show aired. And, like, I was kind of thinking, like, I may have stuck around for, like, a lot more episodes if I didn't go home that episode. Because, like, other people that I wasn't associated with were going home, like the next episode and stuff. Yeah, so I was mad at myself for not doing more to convince 12-Pack to not, you know, to not keep me around instead of Brandy C.
Well, I know that you felt blindsided, and I remember you were talking about, you were telling Brandy C that she lied to you.
Right.
Yeah, and so you were blindsided.
Well, yeah, like her and Megan were, you know, they were like, they were kind of like manipulating the situation to get 12 Pack to send me home instead of Brandy. I mean, again, I was just, I mean, I think at least Megan played the game pretty well, because she made it far. Did she finish in like third or fourth place, I think?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact place where she finished, but I do know she made it pretty far. And I loved the way that she actually, how she kind of took control and eliminated herself. I thought that was kind of cool how she did that.
Oh, yeah. If she knew they were going to vote her off, you may as well eliminate yourself. Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, I mean, I was just mad at myself, because like, if I didn't go home that episode, I think I could have made it pretty far myself. So I should have talked more to 12 Pack and explained that since the two of us were friends since I was in New York, like, I'll help him out, like a different elimination if he keeps me around, and Brandy and Megan are not going to help you out. Yeah, I should have done more of that.
Yeah, well, hindsight is 20/20.
Right, yeah. And I mean, I know the producers were quite disappointed I got sent home, because like, I was, you know, like one of the most entertaining people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Definitely. A lot of the major players in all of these shows were offered their own shows after, you know, I Love Money and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that the plan was to have that production company going for years and years and years, and that would allow time for all of us to get our own shows, all the ones that were like the standout characters. So I know that you were one of the ones that you were talking to them about your own show. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was talking to them a little bit, but it was a problem, because the head of VH1, like until 2008, he really liked me apparently. And then they switched presidents of VH1 around 2008 or 9. And the new guy, like, he did not want to give me my own show, but the old guy did. So I heard that was part of the problem. Well, you know, and of course, the whole thing with Ryan Jenkins, where, you know, all the new shows they were going to start filming got canceled. But yeah, I mean, in retrospect, I would have enjoyed having my own show. I mean, you know, I had like a bunch of funny stuff planned in my mind, you know, like if I got my own show and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did they have, were you guys kicking around possible names at that point?
Yeah, well, I had this idea for the show where it's to make my dating show kind of like a unique concept. Like I would have it like instead of like where I'm searching for a long-term partner, it would be like I'm searching just for a friend with benefits because I'm not ready to settle down. I'd be like, yeah, because I basically say like, you know, so I'm having a great time in these shows. I'm meeting lots of girls, but I'm only 26 years old. I'm not ready to settle down. So I came here not looking for a life partner, but a friend with benefits. And all these 20 girls here get to compete.
You know what? I appreciate your honesty in that because at the end of the day, that's what it was. Because Bret Michaels wasn't really there for love and apparently Flavor Flav wasn't either. So it would have been great if it was like friends with benefits of love. Doesn't quite roll off the tongue as well. But yeah, a lot of these people were promised these, you know, serious relationships, long-term relationships that never even came close to that. So at least you would be being a little bit more honest.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, yeah. Is it true that on like Rock of Love, after each of the seasons, like Bret Michaels, he never even like spoke to the girl who won and was like supposed to be in a relationship?
Is that true? That was my understanding. Now, of course, I wasn't there, so I can't verify it 100%. Right. But my understanding was Jess, who was the winner of season one, was felt totally duped by the whole thing. She pretty publicly told him off at the reunion show. And apparently, like, as soon as he chose her, it was just like lights off, camera off, unplug, everybody grab their stuff and leave. And she's just standing there like in the dark, like, now what? You know, and also Bret Michaels lived in, he goes back and forth between California and Arizona, and she lives in Chicago. So I don't even know how that would have happened. Now, Amber Lake, who I'm still trying to get on the podcast, she was the winner of season two, and she just has been really busy, but I am going to get her on at some point down the road.
Yeah.
She said that she did continue some kind of friendship with him or some kind of something after, you know, so. Same thing with Taya. I'm pretty sure they didn't date or see each other. But and same thing, you know, I don't even know. I don't even know if Flav, but it's interesting, though. So, you know, I guess I heard New York dated TaylorMade a little bit. And I guess Tango also proposed to her. Am I remembering that correctly?
So I'm trying to remember if, he won the show. I'm trying to remember if in the finale he proposed or not. I remember... he got rid of her in the reunion episode. I mean, it was really, he just did not want to be in a relationship with her. So he made up some excuse, like she had said a bad thing about his mom in an interview or something. But, you know, he just did not want to be with her anymore. But I can't remember if he proposed or not.
Yeah, so. I think what everything that you're saying is ringing a bell to me as well. I feel like the guys who are like the bachelors on these shows are less likely to really see the winning girl, whereas the women like I Love New York and Daisy are more inclined to actually date these guys. I don't know what that's just what it seems like. I don't know what the psychology of that is or, you know, logistics. But did you ever
I think it's because the guys, like after the show airs, they're, you know, they go to a bar, there are like 30 girls who want to go home with them. They're like, I don't want to be in a relationship with the winner of the show.
That's a good point. That's a good point because suddenly they're like famous and like that's actually a really good point. That probably is what it is because suddenly they're the eligible bachelor as far as like the fans of the VH1 shows. So that's a good point. You're probably right about that. That makes sense. So did you see New York very much after the shows?
So I actually appeared on another one of her spinoff shows in 2009. The show New York Goes to Work, she like pretended to have a real job and, you know, each episode. Her job. So basically, since my boxing match was a disaster on I Love New York, on her show, New York Goes to Work, she was learning how to box and they brought me back. Well, I got to retrain at a box, and then I got to box her in the episode. I thought she was going to be really good. She was not a good boxer.
I don't think she needs to be a good boxer because she is like her fighting strategy is just the things that she says. Like, those are her daggers.
Right.
So that's really, really funny. But do you guys ever like email back and forth or say hi to each other on social media or text or anything like that? Or
No. And also, like, during the filming, like, of I Love New York, like, as soon as the cameras, you know, were on and, like, I was having private conversations with her, like, she would be really into me and all that. And then as soon as the cameras were off, she would, like, turn away and, like, talk to a producer about something. And, like, then when the cameras go on, she's like, oh, Mr. Boston, how you doing? And we kiss. And then the cameras go off. She walks away.
That makes sense. Oh, wow. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think those are things that, like, really got in the girls' heads as far as Rock of Love goes, is that same sort of, like, you know, there's a little bit of coldness there. So, yeah, that's crazy. Right. That's at least I gave you a pretty good idea while you were there, like, in real time. I mean, I would imagine from what you're telling me, it sounds like you kind of figured out this wasn't, like, really for love, or did you think it was?
I kind of got the feeling she did. I kind of got the feeling she had two goals. She wanted to be as entertaining as possible, so the show would get high ratings and she'd get paid a lot for a season two. But I think the second reason she did, want to genuinely find love. However, if she got a season two, which she didn't, she would then have to get rid of the guy who won season one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's true. Well, so, my other question for you, I read, I can't remember if it was an interview. I think it was an interview that you did where you were talking about how you were kind of upset and rightfully so. And I actually share this thought with you as well. The producers really paid everybody so poorly. And, you know, we all signed these, like, awful contracts that, you know, you just really couldn't get on the show unless you signed these contracts. And of course, they're not going to want to pay all of us like $1 million if some of us were like wallflowers or were not standout stars on the shows, you know. I felt like by the second show that we did, they should have, like, the standout stars should have gotten paid better. And especially, I can, God only knows how many millions and millions of dollars those shows have made. And we just got paid shit. So,
I know.
You know, what you were pretty vocal about that for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, I was vocal because, well, like, so, you know, when I Love Money was filmed, you know, I had to quit my job to go on that show. And, you know, it's not like I won the $250,000 and the salary they paid us to go on the show is like almost nothing. So then they called me up to do I Love Money 2 like 9 months later, but I was working a new job then. I'm like, I cannot afford to quit my job again unless you guys pay me like 1 year salary at my accounting job or something. And of course they weren't willing to do that. So, I mean, like, I remember the producer was telling me, like, we could give you your own show after I Love Money 2 if you just do it. I'm like, wow, I can't afford to quit my job again. And I've already gone on 2 shows. That should be enough to give me my own show now.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. I feel like they kind of were good at, like, dangling that carrot in front of all of our faces.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it did work for the entertainer because I think he went on 3 shows and then he got his own show. We did I Love New York 2 and then I Love Money 1 and I Love Money 2. So that means, like, if I had gone on I Love Money 2, they may have given me my own show instead of him, or they would have still given it to him.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know.
That's true. But
I know I would have had a more entertaining show than him. I mean, he didn't get a season. I think I saw 1 episode of his show, Entertainer and his Frank in his Basement, or I don't even remember what the show was called, but it did not do well enough in the ratings to get a second season. The 1 or 2 episodes I saw were boring. If I had my own show, it would have been very entertaining and, you know, a lot more entertaining than his show, at least.
I would bet money that your show would be incredibly entertaining. And I'm still, like, laughing on the inside about the whole Friends with Benefits. That is amazing. And I love that you're just, like, putting that out there. But you know what? Why lie? You know? I mean, nobody in these shows, you know, at least not on the VH1 shows, ends up being in some crazy long-term relationship. Like, people are lucky if they end up just Friends with Benefits, you know? So I love it. That's amazing. Well, I'm going to grab my laptop now because I have a lot of people on the Talk of Love podcast Instagram are super excited that you are going to be on the podcast, and they have some specific questions. I'm going to ask you some fan questions.
Sure.
So let's see here. One question. I thought this was a good question. The Unfair Collector on Instagram asks if New York stayed in the house.
Yeah, she did stay in the house, and she got the master bedroom that was huge. And then all of the guys, it would be like four guys in one tiny bedroom that's meant for like a kid, and four yeah. guys in a second bedroom. So it's like these double bunk beds in a tiny room. And then she has her own huge master bedroom. Yeah.
So she actually stayed there because Bret Michaels didn't stay at our house.
I'm pretty sure she stayed there. I mean, it was a long time ago. Like, I remember some nights, like the filming would go on until late. I think she stayed in the house, or at least some of the nights she did. Maybe some of the other nights she did not. Yeah.
Do you remember seeing her ever, like, in the morning?
Yeah. I did see her sometimes in the morning. So I think she was staying in the house. Yeah.
Okay. So did you ever have the experience where producers, because this happened to us on Rock of Love a lot, where producers would just kind of randomly pop their heads out, like when they weren't supposed to, and just like, hey, Mr. Boston, come here. And like pull you aside and tell you, like give you dirt on somebody or tell you to do something a certain way. Did you get any of that, the producer manipulation stuff?
I remember on one scene that did not make it onto the show. Like she had came to me, New York, and said, like, she heard I said something bad about her to another guy. This was not on the show. They decided to not include it in the storyline. And then she said, like, so, like, if I went into the production room and watched all the, you know, the reruns of the monitors, would I see this? Then as soon as she walked away, a producer came over and said, so, Mr. Boston, she said that, like, we, you know, she threatened she would go into the camera room and watch the monitors to see if you said what, you know, something bad about her. And then he told me, like, we would never show her the monitors. I mean, if it was a serious issue, he said, like, if two guys got into a fist fight when she wasn't there, they would have to show her that on the camera. However, if it's just like you know, socializing with another guy and she doesn't know who said what, no, we would never show her the monitor. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. And also, yeah. So in terms of I would sometimes have a producer come up to me and say, like, so Mr. Boston, 12 packs, been talking to her for 15 minutes straight. We think she's kind of had enough of him. Why don't you just go over and like steal her away and bring her to another part of the house and charm her and smooth talk her? So yeah. I mean, yeah. So like sometimes like that kind of thing would happen, but still, like most of the stuff you saw on the show, it was real. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. We got a lot of that as well too. Like the producers would kind of like, you know, with us, get Bret Michaels and get him away from her, or go tell Bret Michaels that she said this or whatever. They did a little bit of that as well. There was times on our show in the very beginning, like literally like the first couple of episodes where the girls were being like a little bit more cordial to each other. And I think the producer was just kind of like putting that energy out there to us to try to get it, to try to like divide us, basically. They didn't want us being like chummy, buddy. You know, they wanted us divided and going against each other. So.
Right. Yeah. Now, I will say that, like, after the first two or three days in the house, like, I think at that point the producers had saw that I was quite entertaining on my own, and they did not really have to tell me or, like, give me suggestions to, like, do this funny thing or that funny thing. So, I mean, I don't know if like they were like going up to other cast members and suggesting they like do something or whatnot. But you know, like in terms of me, they saw I was pretty entertaining on my own. So instead of, so like apart from the example I just gave where they would suggest I go over and try to steal her away from another guy. I never got any suggestion that I should like do something like entertaining or yeah.
So do you feel like the way that you were portrayed on the show was an accurate depiction of who you truly are, personality-wise?
Yeah, for the most part. Well, yeah, I mean, I was entertaining on the show and I'm entertaining in my real life too. However, since I'm an accountant, if I'm at work, I'm not going to do something funny that I did on the show at work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
That makes sense.
So,
that makes sense.
You know, as soon as I get home from work, I'm the same entertaining person you saw on the show.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. So Jesus Arango I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, on Instagram says, I really hate how the guys bullied him on I Love Money Chance, real white boy. That really bothered him. Did you feel like you were bullied? Did it get a little bit much for you to deal with on those shows?
Well, a little bit. However, I did hear after I was at a party with the production company, and I heard a producer had gone up to one of those guys and encouraged all three of them to kind of bully me and stuff, you know. And of course, that same producer, you know, he's being really friendly to me. So he's being friendly to me. And then I find out he's going up to other guys and encouraging them to do something bad to me. I mean, I don't know how much of that's true, but yeah.
I believe it based on everything I know.
Yeah. However, I would see, you know, Chance, real white boy, you know, off camera afterwards. And I mean, we were all on good friendly terms. So yeah. It was all good.
Okay, so when the cameras were not focusing on you guys, or if it wasn't the middle of a challenge, if you guys were just hanging out in a chill mode when the cameras were somewhere else, you guys were friendly and cordial with each other, you and Chance, right, and everybody, white boy?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember there was a pool table, so sometimes, you know, me, Chance, and a couple other guys would play around with pool, it's 2-on-2, you know, pool and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay. Somebody had a really funny question here. I actually don't remember this, but one of the fans wants to know, did you talk about having, putting your STDs by your bedside? I don't remember that.
Yeah. So, that was on Where Are They Now special kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, so yeah. So I mean, as you know, when we went on the show, we had to get tested for STDs, and I got a copy of the actual, you know, my
results,
negative STD chart.
Yeah.
So then I basically I didn't have it always posted on my bedroom door, but for purposes of the Where Are They Now episode, I came up with this funny shtick where I would basically post my STDs on the bedroom door, and then I said in the episode, so if I invite a girl over, or I start dating a girl and she comes over to my place first time, her first question is always going to be oh my God, did you catch an STD from New York? So to calm their fears, I post my negative STD result on the bedroom door. And actually, that stick, it made it onto the soup.
Oh, so nice.
I was watching the soup a few days after the episode aired, and they showed me and my STD results on the door, and they both made some joke about it, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love that. I think that I made it onto the soup and Chelsea Handler. It was sort of a badge of honor. If you can be insulted by Chelsea Handler and the soup, then wear it as a badge of honor.
Well, yeah. And I was not expecting that to make it on the soup, since it was only a Where Are They Now episode. It was not the actual show. I love New York. So yeah, I was surprised when something that I did just on a Where Are They Now episode ended up.
That's awesome. So tell me about your romantic life now. Are you seeing anybody? You got a girlfriend? You got a wife? What's going on with you now?
Girlfriend, yeah.
Oh,
in
yeah?
Boston. We live together, yeah.
Oh, so how long have you guys been together for?
About 2.5 years.
Oh, that sounds very serious. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you very much, yeah.
What does she think of the whole reality TV thing?
Well, she never saw the show. She never wants to see the show. She had friends who saw the show. She claims they told her bad things about me. I don't know. But, you know, if she's happy not watching the show, that's okay. Yeah.
Well, good. That's awesome. Well, is there anything else that you'd want to, before I let you go, is there anything else that you want to tell fans or that you want to promote? Or do you want people to go see you on social media? Anything you want to tell people?
Honestly, I don't really have anything to promote except my Instagram is kind of the only like social media I do now, you know, in terms of my character, Mr. Boston. So, yeah, you should find me on Instagram. See, I'm trying to get enough followers where I can then get on to Cameo. You know that thing, Cameo?
Yeah, I'm on Cameo. You actually, Cameo is awesome. I don't think you need any particular amount of followers to get onto Cameo. It's hilarious. I'm on Cameo and I do cameos all the time. They're a lot of fun to do for people. But sometimes I go on there and just like check out other celebrities' cameos, which is hilarious. And if you ever find yourself bored and you want to do that, I highly, highly recommend going on Cameo, search Gilbert Gottfried, Charlie Sheen, and search, who's the other one I love to look at? Tommy Lee, the drummer of Motley Crue. They're hilarious. They're so, so funny. So yeah, I think you could go on there now. I don't think you need to wait for anything.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Well, good deal. Well, it's so nice to see you and I'm glad that you're doing well. And, you know what? One other question. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah. I wanted to ask you this. If hypothetically there were more reality TV shows or another show that was offered to you, would you do it?
So, you know, actually,
maybe like Survivor?
Yes. Well, if it was a show I had to quit my job for, no. However, if it's one of those kind of shows now where they only like film at night so people can, you know, keep their jobs, I may do that kind of show. But I mean, I'm not going to quit my job to go on a show. But like if I had free time, like, and I wasn't working, if I thought the show was going to be a hit and it was definitely going to air on TV, then yes, I would do it.
Nice. You know,
some reality shows never air on TV, or they do and then no one watches them. So I would need to be convinced that it was definitely going to be on TV and it would be a hit. And I would have creative control to be as entertaining as possible.
Well, I think it's always good to kind of put that energy out into the universe because you never know. But, awesome. It was so nice talking with you. I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast. And I really enjoyed watching you on the shows. You were so entertaining. I know you still have lots and lots of fans. So, and I'm glad to see that you're doing well.
Thank you very much, Lacey. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you next time. Take care, Lee, Mr. Boston.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Take care.
That was so cool. Yay. I just interviewed Mr. Boston. It's funny because when I interview the girls from my own show, from Rock of Love, it's like, for the most part, I'm already friends with them or acquaintances. It's sort of like interviewing my own peers. But just like you guys, I was a huge fan of Rock of Love, Flavor of Love and I Love New York. And so a lot of these people that were on those shows, I've really never met. So I get to interview them from like a fangirl perspective, which is really kind of cool and fun. So yeah, I'm really happy that Mr. Boston came on the podcast. That was really fun. So I wanted to really quickly give a shout out to the contributors of this podcast. So my contributors are the ones who make this podcast happen. The whole reason the production and the audio sounds great and everything's all polished and awesome sounding and looking is because of you contributors. So if you want to become a contributor, if you are enjoying the podcast and you want to show your support, then you should become a contributor as well. I have lots of really cool rewards that you guys will enjoy. And if you go to my website, which is talkoflove.net/contribute, then you can choose a tier group that works for you, whatever dollar amount works for you. And there's all kinds of cool rewards. For instance, one of my personal favorites is doing monthly Skype chats with my contributors. I've really gotten to know a lot of you very well by doing Skype chats on a regular basis. It's really, really fun. I will chat with you for half an hour and we can talk about anything you want. I answer all your questions. Also, I am doing reaction videos to all of the Rock of Love episodes. And I'm actually most of the way through season one. So once I'm done with that, I'm going to move on and do reaction videos to Charm School and to I Love Money and probably to the other of Love shows as well. I'm just going to keep it going. So I have a lot of people that are signed up for that tier. It's just $10 a month, super easy. And if you sign up now, I will send you the first 8 reaction videos that I did to the first 8 Rock of Love episodes for season one. So all of that just for $10. So and you will also know that your money is going directly into keeping this podcast super sexy. So thank you guys so much. Some of my top contributors who have been contributing for a while now and higher tier amounts, I want to say thank you so much to, including Mike Paquette, Jen Grogan, Zena, Camille, Robert Yager, Alex Week, Evilness, Corey Cooper, and Joshua Murray. You guys are awesome. I love you guys so much. This whole podcast is not just about me. It's about you guys. It's about the guests. It's about Scott, my man, who does the editing and films this and makes it look amazing. It's a collaborative effort on everybody's part. And I appreciate you guys so much. I just want you to know that. Also, speaking of the Talk of Love website, if you go and click on shopping, I can't remember how I have it worded, but if you go on there, you can buy one of the Talk of Love t-shirts. And in fact, I'm wearing one right now. Let me move the microphone so you can see it. This is the Don't Threaten Me With a Good Time V-neck t-shirt. So if you want to get one of those, go to talkoflove.net. And also make sure to go check out Liquid Death. It's pure mountain water in an aluminum can. So no more plastic in the ocean. So if you want to check all the stuff out that I just talked about, just go to the description below this video on YouTube and all of the links will be there for your convenience. And make sure to find me, Lacey Skulls with S-C-U-L-L-S on Instagram. Find me on Twitter. Find Talk of Love Podcast on Instagram. All good stuff. So you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your continued support. Thanks for watching and don't threaten me with a good time. Bye guys. The Talk of Love Podcast is sponsored by Liquid Death. Murder your thirst. Liquid Death is 100% mountain water from the Alps. There is no plastic. It's mountain water out of an aluminum can. So you'll be doing right by the environment and you'll be doing right by your body. If you want your 10% off, be sure to go to liquiddeath.com. Type in the promo code TALKOFLOVE. No spaces. Next time you're thirsty, murder your thirst. Pick up a can of Liquid Death today.